all those things are important, mm-hmm. but it starts with you. And I'll tease people to say the most important thing related to leadership is self-reflection. And they'll say, it's the most important. I said, here's a little equation, Christina, here's a little equation, three steps that convinces you that everything related to leadership starts with self-reflection.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Our guest today is Harry Kramer, a man with a storied career in healthcare. Harry is a former chairman and CEO of Baxter International, a $12 billion global healthcare company. Currently, he's an executive partner with Madison Dearborn Partners, a private equity firm based in Chicago, and a clinical professor of leadership at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. Harry has authored two best-selling leadership books, and in this episode, he shares his insights on the importance of relating to those you want to lead. He also offered a simple test on how to know if you have true self-confidence. Here's our conversation. Well, thank you, Harry, for joining me this morning here in San Francisco. I mean, I know you're not in San Francisco, but here we are in San Francisco, shelter in place. Shall we get started?
Absolutely. Great to be with you, Christine.
So I thought you've been really productive and busy since you stepped down as the CEO and chairman of Baxter's. You've been teaching classes. You're one of the professor for Kellogg and teaching leadership. And I thought many of our entrepreneurs can learn so much about what you've learned to become a leader, to lead an organization as big as Baxter, as well as, you know, the full journey of where you are today. And you wrote, you know, you have a few books, multiple books around leadership. And one of the things that you mentioned about is like there's four principles of being a good leader. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, and it's great to be with you, as I said. And I always tell groups, executives at all levels, Christine, I have very, very few answers, many opinions. So we don't do Q&A, question and answer, do a lot of Q&A, question and opinion. And more than happy to share opinions, Christine, on anything that you think your audience would be interested in. And yes, when we talk about leadership, Christine, and please jump in and challenge me as we go through here, we can mm-hmm. have a good dialogue. So just jump in here, cut me off once in a while, because I get a little excited about this. when I think about leadership, I always try to start off reminding people that leadership, and you mentioned this to me when you and I were talking earlier, that leadership isn't a destination. Leadership is a journey. I mean, I really believe, Christine, every day I'm given, I can be better than the day before. So how do I continue to move forward? How do I get better? What do I learn from failure? How do I do that? Mm-hmm. And on this journey, what I've realized is that there's four principles that if you focus on them, I really think it moves you along very well on the journey. And I'll mention the four, and then I can give you a little bit of description if you'd like to go through them.
Yes, that's good.
But the order of them is a very specific order, Christine. First is self-reflection, and I'll define that. The second one is the ability to have a balanced perspective. The third one is true self-confidence. And if somebody's writing it down, I always remind them to double underline the word true. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is genuine humility. And I would double underline the word genuine. Self-reflection, mm-hmm. balanced perspective, true self-confidence, and genuine humility. And the very first one, and I'll summarize this, Christine, because we could spend like 3 hours if we were in class on just self-reflection. But the whole idea around self-reflection is most of your listeners probably, I'm going to guess, have two or three times the number of things they'd like to do than they're ever going to get done. And if they're really conscientious, they're going to want to go faster and faster to try to get a lot done. And they're going to begin to, that famous word, you know, multitask. And then, of course, with these great devices, Blackberries, Blueberries, iPhones, iPads, well, I'll just go faster and faster. And the question I try to get people to respond to, Christine, at all levels, including CEOs, entrepreneurs, you name it, is have we confused activity and productivity? We're very active. It's amazing how active we are. But how productive are we? Or, Christine, are we moving so fast? We have no idea how productive we are. Let's just keep moving. And the very first thing that a value-based leader does is take the time to self-reflect. And by that, I mean to take a short amount of time. We don't have a lot. A short amount of time to get off by yourself, turn off the noise, and ask yourself some pretty specific questions. Mm-hmm. What are my values? What's my purpose? What really matters, Christine? What kind of a leader do I want to be? What kind of example do I want to set for other people? And at least for me, Christine, I'm not capable of thinking about these things when I'm doing 10 other things at the same time. But taking a little bit of time to think about this helps me separate out activity and productivity. It actually helps me get from the roots to the trees to the forest, helps me prioritize, think globally, put things into perspective. So that's the first principle.
And how do you do that? You know, oftentimes when you're busy, you're focusing on getting your things done, which is plenty. And sometimes your brain, when you focus on the detail, it's hard to think about the forest.
Great point, Christine. And so what I suggest to people is you've got to get a little bit of time, get off by yourself, turn off the noise, and take the time to think about this. And some people say to me, well, can you give me an example? Well, up front, I said, no answers, opinions. Mm-hmm. Some people that are listening may have gotten up early this morning, gone for a jog, taken a walk, done it when they're commuting. Some people may be praying or meditating. The practice I've had, Christine, and I'm very disciplined about it, is I take 15 minutes. It's at the end of the day, usually midnight, and I go through what I call a personal self-examination. Mine, Christine, goes like this. Everybody will develop their own, but mm-hmm. mine goes like this. What did I say I was going to do today? What did I actually do? What am I proud of? What am I not proud of? How did I lead people? How did I follow people? Christine, if I lived today over again, what would I have done differently? And then the last one is if I have tomorrow, knowing fully well aware that sooner or later I won't, but if I do have tomorrow and I'm a learning person, based on what I learned today, how will I operate differently tomorrow? On whatever dimension of your life has any significance, it puts things into perspective. And I got to believe, Christine, some of your folks are saying, well, sounds great, but I don't have the time. Well, is it that we don't have the time, or is this something we don't want to do? This could get very sensitive, right? But when we say we don't have the time, that's sort of interesting. We're talking about leadership, right? Some people this morning may have gotten up, commuted, you know, did something, what, a little prayer. But the idea that you got the time, do you want to do it? And then folks will say to me, well, do you do it every day? Christine, I've done this every day now for almost 40 years, all right? And some people say, well, do you have to write it down? I don't think you have to write it down. I do, because if I don't write it down, am I self-reflecting or am I just daydreaming, right? Particularly if I've got a couple of glasses of wine. I'm not sure what's happened, right? So there's a certain discipline to this. And then, Christine, when you start doing it, I think it's very important to have a few people around you that will help you hold accountable. My wife, Julie, will say, hey, Harry, left to your own devices, you could convince yourself of anything. Do you want to know what I think? The answer to that better be yes, Christine. That better be yes, okay? But having somebody, because we can fool ourselves, but it literally centers you and helps you put everything into perspective.
Is that where the balance of, you're talking about your second principle?
Correct. Because now we move and say, all right, we could talk about a lot of topics today. We could talk about the situation in the Middle East. We could talk about North Korea. We could talk about the recent U.S. presidential election. You do have those conversations, and people, as you know, Christine, have very strong opinions, very strong opinions. The problem I find is very often people with very strong opinions have very little understanding of perspectives other than their own. They understand theirs, but if you think about what's happening in this country right now, we're so polarized because very few people understand perspectives other than their own. And the second principle, Christine, partially as a result, as you said, due to self-reflection, is I take the time to understand multiple sides of a story. Or I quote a quote supposedly from St. Francis, I seek to understand before I'm understood. I seek to understand before I'm understood. Because if I'm talking to you, Christine, and we have a different perspective, I will try never to say, hey, Christine, I don't know where you're coming from. Because I actually think that's ignorant. If I take the time, I can understand. Then I'll decide, do I agree or disagree? Mm-hmm. Right? But if I'm a really strong leader, I don't have the need to be right. I'm trying to do the right thing. And if I think we ought to go east and you think we ought to go west, I really want to understand why you think west makes sense. Because if west makes more sense than east, I'm going to say, hey, Christine, let's go west. I have no need to be right. I'm trying to do the right thing. Having a balanced perspective.
do you need to find a trusted person who can provide you that balanced perspective?
Christine, perfect. You want to have a whole collection of people. You want to have 5, 10, 20. You want to have a lot of different people, because I believe, Christine, I can learn something from every single person I talk to. So if I'm in a group, Bill, what do you think? Mary, what do you think? Joe, what do you think? Wait a minute. Joe, what did you say? I think that's it. See, because interestingly enough, Christine, running a $12 billion company with 55,000 people, I didn't worry whether I knew everything, because I knew I couldn't, but I could pick it out if I heard it. But by the way, you know, Hermino's only going to tell me if he actually thinks I really want to know. So you better set up the environment that you want people to challenge you, that you want people to give their views, because that's how you have the best people. And then they feel they're part of it. Mm-hmm. Very, very important.
Okay. And then the third principle, which is true confidence.
True self-confidence, right. And what's very interesting about true self-confidence, very often leaders will say to me, well, what's the truth? I mean, you're either self-confident or not. What's this truth thing? Well, no show of hands, but many of us have worked for people who can act very self-confident, Christine, who have no self-confidence at all. You know, the macho, do what I told you to do. I've never made a mistake, crap. No. I'm asking something very different. Do you have true self-confidence? And it's very interesting. I get most of the ideas from the students, Christine, and one said, well, Professor Kramer, how do I know if I have true self-confidence? So I developed two good questions that all of your listeners can ask themselves and folks on their team to determine whether they have true self-confidence. Question number one, have you reached a point in your life where you're comfortable to say, I don't know. Christine, I don't know, but I'm not going to just wait around. You tell me how fast you need an answer. I'll get you an answer, but I'm not going to make believe. I just don't know, but I'll get the answer. Mm-hmm. Second question, have you reached a point in your career where you're willing to say, I was wrong? Forget what I said. What Christine says makes more sense. Let's do that. Are you willing to admit that you were wrong? And where I have a lot of fun with this, Christine, some people will say, well, why is it that a lot of people don't want to admit they don't know and they don't want to admit that they were wrong? And I'll say, well, they're really worried that the boss may not think very highly of them. And here's a little leadership model, Christine, that I think will help. And I love the simplicity. So if somebody wants the total leadership model that I use, it's three words, Christine. Leadership, influence, relate. Leadership, influence, relate. All right? Because you realize leadership has nothing to do with titles and organizational charts. Leadership has everything to do with the ability to influence people. Well, how do you influence people? You have to be able to relate to people. So if I can relate to you, then maybe I can influence you and I can lead you. Now, if that model works, leadership, influence, relate, here's an interesting thought. Most people I know do not relate well to people who know everything. Most people I know don't relate well to people that never make a mistake. I don't know how to relate to these people. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me a question and I say, hey, Christine, I don't know, but I'll get you an answer real quick. I'm betting you may say, oh, Harry's a regular person. I can relate to Harry. Ah, if you can relate to me, I can influence you and I can lead you, right? Mm-hmm. It works the opposite of what most people fear. And so this ability to determine, do you have true self-confidence, becomes incredibly important.
And I think you're right. I think oftentimes people they feel like if they don't know, then how could they be the leader? And I feel like there's that image that you need to portray as a leader, which is not always, I don't know, maybe it's on a movie or something.
Yeah. Well, and Christine, your point's a very valid one, because here's another little, I love to give practical tips for people. So here's a practical tip that may surprise you and all the listeners. When I was the chief financial officer of Baxter, I had just become that role. And the fellow was the chairman of the board, literally said, Harry, congratulations. We're very happy to make you the CFO. But we're just going to let you know, over the next 5 years, I'm going to be looking at candidates to become the CEO. And Harry, an awful lot of people, and it could be your listeners, feel that before they get promoted, Christine, before they get promoted, they think they need to know everything about the next job or they're not qualified. So he said to me, Harry, if you needed to know everything about the CEO before you got in the job, how long would it take you? I said, Mr. Graham, I said, I only know half of this job. He says, well, I do know how long. He said, because I've been in this company for 40 years. I'm 80 years old and the chairman. Harry, if you needed to know everything about being the CEO before you got in the job, you would be about 185 years old. But he said, I've got great news for you. And this news I'm going to give you, Christine, you can use this with everyone. He said to me, Harry, any job you're in now or will ever be in the rest of your life, there's only two things you have to know. I said, oh, Mr. Graham, what's that? He said, well, the first thing you have to know is, what are you really good at? What are your God-given talents? What do you bring to the party? What do you got? He said, the only other thing you have to know is, who knows what you don't know? And I said, Mr. Graham, this is going to work out great. I got about 30 people who know what I don't know. I keep them very close. So you know what you know, and you admit, hey, I don't know. Hey, Harmony, do you know? Who knows? Okay? Because if you know and you know who else knows, you're going to be fine. Right? There's not the expectation. If you're my boss, you don't expect me to know everything, but you do expect me to get an answer. Right. And that's why you want a big network. It's not 2-3 people. It could be 100 people, right? And you're constantly helping other people. So when you need help, they're helping you, just paying it forward. True self-confidence.
Okay. And that's what you were saying earlier about, you know, you don't know the answer, but you can find the answer. And that is what it is.
Exactly. And think, Christine, think about people you know who don't want to admit that they don't know. It's like carrying an anvil around. I mean, you're just very depressed. I mean, because you're constantly exhausted because there's no way you can know everything. Okay.
Right.
But it's a question of what do you know, what you don't. And they have a little bit of fun with this. You may enjoy this, Christine, your listeners. I had one young woman said to me, have you always been willing to admit what you don't know? Uh-huh. And I said, well, Elizabeth, yes, because I figured out leadership, influence, relate. And if I want to relate to people, I got to be human and admit it. So she said to me, it's kind of an interesting question. She said, well, give me examples of what you know and what you don't know. And I thought, well, I was a math major. I'm really good at numbers. If it has anything to do with numbers, I pick it up very quickly. She said, what about what you don't know? And I said, well, I have no mechanical ability whatsoever. So I said, an example, when somebody asks me, what kind of heat do you have in your house? I have hot heat in my house. Okay. I have no idea. Okay. I it's a boiler. I don't know what it is, but, in my house on all the thermostats, I have the telephone number for the heating guy. Okay. I take good care of him. And Julie always teased me, Christine. She introduces me something at parties. She'll say, oh, this is my husband, Harry. He's the only person I've ever met. When he flushes a toilet, he thinks it's a miracle. I do think it's a miracle, but I got a plumber, Christine. I send that guy a box of candy every year. I know what I know. I know who knows what I don't know. And I don't look like I'm too anxious, do I? I mean, I'm not going to worry about it. No anxiety here, okay? No anxiety here. True self-confidence.
I think that you're right. But I think sometimes you develop your true self-confidence as you do more things in life.
True.
And I notice, like, if you're as a kid, right? You know, when you're teenagers, they like to think they know everything.
Yep.
And then as they get older, they realize there's so much they don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think it comes with the growth, the self-growth to get to the true confidence, I think.
Absolutely. Well, you probably know, Christine, if you've ever studied any subject in depth, in detail, you realize the more you know,
the more you don't know.
How much you don't know, right? That's what makes it fun. And that's why you constantly have to have a circle of people that can help you figure it out.
Right.
Self-confidence.
And the fourth principle is the true genuine humility.
Right. And like, I never say self-confidence without true. I never say humility without genuine. Okay. And that's fun, Christine, because I had one student who said, great question, by the way. How do you know if you have genuine humility? And if you think you have it, do you really have it? There's a great question.
Right.
So I had to come up with another question. And this is a good one, Christine, for all your listeners. In terms of if a person genuinely wants to know, do they have true genuine humility? And here's the question. A lot of your listeners are people, they're very good, they're smart, they've learned a lot. Question. How did you get to where you are so far? How did you get to in your schooling, in your education, in your companies, in your job? How did you get to where you are? Now, having done this hundreds of times, Christine, two top answers. Well, Harry, how did I get to where I am? I worked very hard. Number one. Number two, I have several skill sets. And the combination of working hard and skill sets, that's how I got to where I am. Now, If I think about it quickly myself, quickly, I would say, yeah, I work pretty hard and I've got several skill sets. But if we're self-reflective, Christine, are there a couple other things that come to mind? I'll give you five that have happened to me, and your listeners can decide if any of them happened to them. Mm-hmm. No particular order, but numbers, guys, we number things, right? Number one, luck. Let's pause a moment on luck. I was a very lucky guy. And of course, you'll hear these comments. Can you plan for luck? Can you prepare for luck? Probably, but I was very lucky, number one. Number two, timing. Being in the right place at the right time, huge for me. Now, some people will combine luck and timing into one. No, I don't. Why? I know about you, Christine, but my timing was amazing, okay? I tease people that several times that I got promoted, the person who was in the job before me, when they were in the job, they accomplished nothing. You replace those people, Christine, you look like you walk on water. Okay? I mean, there were several times I said, hey, I'm just breathing. Harry, big improvement over the last person who was in the job, okay? My timing was great. Number three, the team. Now, this is an interesting one because when we were all starting off, Christine, I don't know about you, but I was competing against some people. They could do the work of two or three people. I mean, they were amazing. Christine, I could barely do the work of one person. But rather than getting depressed about it, I thought to myself, wait a minute. They can do the work of three people. I'm pretty confident they can't do the work of 50 people. If I can figure out leadership, influence, relate, if I can treat people in a way, Christine, that people want to work with me and for me, I'll be able to influence them and I can lead them. But that only happens if you attract people. Mm-hmm. If people want to work for you, if trust, credibility, and so on. Luck, timing, the team. The fourth one, mentors and sponsors. Okay. I mean, there were several people that helped me. And if it wasn't for those people, I never would have been the CEO of Baxter. Okay. It never would have happened. You never forget those people. And I think, Christine, paying it forward, who are the people now as successful leaders, entrepreneurs, that we're helping the next generation behind us? Luck, timing, the team, mentors. The fifth one, a little bit more personal, but for some of us, there's a religious, spiritual perspective. In my case, these are talents I've been given from the man upstairs. I'm supposed to use to the best of my ability, okay? So if any of those work for you, it could be one, two, none of them, whatever, but if any one of those five work for you, luck, timing, the team, mentors, somebody upstairs, I think what begins to happen is people start to say, Christine, you know what? I'll never forget where I came from because many of us start off with very, very little. Mm-hmm. We'll keep things in perspective. You don't read your own press clippings. You don't get caught up with yourself. And by the way, Christine, and maybe you've seen this in your career, the higher up somebody goes, the higher up they go, I believe they better surround themselves with a few people who knew them before they became a big shot. Because on the way to becoming a big shot, people are going to start to say, Harry, you're amazing. Harry, you're remarkable. If Harry's not careful, Harry could start to believe it. What's the problem with that? Once again, if it's leadership, influence, relate, as you know, Christine, most people do not relate real well to egomaniacs. Mm-hmm. Most people don't react real well to people where it's all about them.
Right.
And I really believe at that point in time, Christine, people start to say, you know what? Every single person matters. Mm-hmm. Everybody. It's not about me. Okay. And then you start to realize, and by the way, the reason I call it genuine humility is because we've all seen people that'll say, well, everybody's important. And then you watch what they do and mm-hmm. you realize it's just a bunch of talk. And faking this makes you really look stupid because people see right through it, as you know. So self-reflection, balance, true self-confidence, genuine humility. We're on a journey. And if we can continuously get better, I think we can lead ourselves. And if we can lead ourselves, we're prepared to lead others.
Right. And I think all these four principles, they're all connected in a way. You need one to get the other. For example, with the genuine humility, if you don't have the true self-confidence, even if somebody tell you, hey, this is not who you are or who you were, but then if they don't have the true self-confidence, then they would not accept that feedback.
Exactly. Well said. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
And as a person, how do you make sure that you have all that four?
Yeah.
So it's like what kind of discipline, commitment, and what kind of habit? do you have to create for yourself to develop all these four skills?
Yeah. So great questions, Christine. You asked great questions. So the way I think about it is, first of all, it all starts with self-reflection. In fact, it's very interesting. When people talk about leadership, very often they'll talk about, I need to be a great communicator. I need to prioritize. I need to hire good. All those things are important. Mm-hmm. But it starts with you. And I'll tease people to say, the most important thing related to leadership is self-reflection. And they'll say, it's the most important. I said, here's a little equation, Christina. Here's a little equation, three steps that convinces you that everything related to leadership starts with self-reflection. It goes like this. Step one, if I'm not self-reflective, is it possible for me to know myself? I don't think so. Part two, if I don't know myself, is it possible for me to lead myself? I doubt that. Third part is, if I can't lead myself, how can I possibly lead others, right? So it all starts with that. So in my mind, the self-reflection is being disciplined, finding some time to do it yourself, finding several people, as we said, to hold you accountable, to make sure that you're doing it, and then literally being open enough to say, I really do want to understand what other people think, because it isn't about me, and I'm willing to change my mind if something else makes sense. And I think surrounding yourself with some good values-driven people that'll help you stay on course becomes very important. But to your point, for my four favorite words, okay, discipline, focus, consistency, credibility, all right? I've got to be disciplined. In doing that, I'll stay focused. I will do it consistently. Then I start to establish a little credibility with myself. And if I'm credible with myself, I can be credible with other people. That's the way I think about it.
Okay, that's great.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rutnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
I think that we cover about the four principles about being a good leader. One of your last book, we talked about the 168.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting, as we are in the world of everything moving so fast, rat race, but there's only limit. We all have the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And how do you make good use of your time? And I like what you're talking about. How can we live a value-based life? And I thought that's the premise about 168.
You're absolutely right. How do you live a value-based life? And again, you stated so well, Christine, everybody's running around. Everybody's got a million things to do. But at the end of the day, where are you spending your time? And if you're not self-reflective enough to say, wait a minute, what really matters? Because as you well know, Christine, I get this almost every day. Somebody will say to me, Harry, I'm having trouble balancing my life. And what I've concluded is most people that are having trouble balancing their life haven't been self-reflective enough to figure out what they're trying to balance. Right? So taking a little bit of time, and this whole concept of, you got 168 hours, okay? I always have to explain to people. Somebody said, well, what's 168? And I said, well, when you're having a really bad week, how hard are you working? Well, 24/7. Well, multiply 24 times 7, carry the 2. I was a math major. It's 168, usually, if you do it right, right? So everybody's got 168 hours. That's all you got, okay? Now, based on that, how important are certain things to you? And I'm always very sensitive, Christine. Everybody's 168 is going to be different. You may have different priorities than me. That may be different than Harmony. So I'm not going to tell somebody what it ought to be. I'm going to tell them you ought to think about it, because it's remarkable the number of people that are constantly surprised, right? And the second chapter of the book, I think, is called I'm Surprised You're Surprised, okay? Because if you're self-reflective, you shouldn't be surprised, right? If somebody says to me, my job, my career is the most important thing. That is much more important to me than my significant other, than my children or whatever. Now, you or I may say, ooh, I don't know if I'd want to do that. But if they want to do that, But they shouldn't be surprised. I mean, the fact that they don't know their children, the fact that their significant other left, why is that a surprise? Okay? Don't be surprised. In fact, I always tease people, Christine, you know, you can, any of your listeners, any of the people who listen to this can determine whether somebody else is self-reflective by talking to them for about 15 minutes. Why? Because it only takes about 15 minutes to find out how surprised are they. Because if they're surprised a lot, they're not self-reflective. See, because you and I, if we're self-reflective, we know sooner or later, we may not get the job we wanted. We may not get the promotion. Somebody we like a lot may do something bad. Somebody we love may pass away and die, but it shouldn't be a surprise. Okay. Because you can predict most of these things, right? But there's a lot of people walking around. They're just surprised. They're surprised. And the exercise I try to give people, as you know, Christine, is I'll literally say, all right, you hear this bizarre expression, by the way, and I bet a lot of your listeners have heard this amazing expression called work-life balance, which I find to be the most confusing, right? Because say it slowly, work-life balance. You're either working or you're living, right? Now, some of us are working enough. If that's not living, that's a problem. So 20 years ago, I decided I'm not talking about work-life balance. I'm going to talk about life balance, right? Because most people are trying to balance their life. Now, work is important because if you're not working, you're probably not eating, right? So work's okay. But how do you look at what's important? And when I was writing the book, Christine, I found it fascinating. I talked to several hundred people and I literally just said, how do you think about life balance? And people said, well, I've got like 3 buckets that are important, or I've got 5, 10 buckets, whatever. It turns out there's an amazing normal distribution around 6. Most people cover most of they want in 6. And by the way, some people don't even use all 6, and that's okay. But the 6 buckets that you're aware of, there's 1 bucket for your career and your education, bucket 1. There's a 2nd bucket for your family and friends. There's a 3rd bucket for some people for their spiritual, religious, whatever. There's a 4th bucket for your health. That's where we squeeze in like things like sleep, exercise, whatever. There's a 5th bucket for fun, having a good time, going to the ball game, whatever. And then the 6th bucket, some people call it social responsibility. I call it being a best citizen, making a difference. The short time we're on this earth, what are we doing to make it a better place, right? Now, you take those 6 buckets, and what you have to do, Christine, is you have to allocate and say, on average, now, every week's going to be different, right? And if you're traveling to Japan for the week or you're going to South America, but on average, what percentage of your time would you want on each of those 6? Okay. And the fun exercise in the book, if people look it up, and by the way, Christine, let's warn people now, do not attempt this exercise unless you're in a really good mood. You want to really be in a good mood when you do this exercise. Here we go. The first column, you can imagine, the first column, Christine, is your goal. What percentage of your time on average would you want it? That's the goal. Second column, current reality. What does your life really look like? The third column is the difference, right? And I've yet to meet the person, maybe it's you, Christine, who says, wow, you know, what a coincidence. My goal lines up with exactly where I'm spending my time. I haven't met that person yet, right? But most of us, there's a difference. Now, if it's a small difference, welcome to the human race. If there's a big difference, well, is that because I said that was important, but it's really not? Or, oh, no, it was real, but I'm not disciplined, focused, okay, consistent, credible in order to do it, right? But I think it's a great, great exercise, because then you can start to ask yourself, are you truly spending the time where you, forget about anybody else, where you think it ought to be, right? And I have fun with this, because somebody will say to me, well, Harry, I'd like to do that, but I don't have the time. No. You have 160. You have 160. Now, it may not be a high enough priority for you, and that's okay. That's okay. But don't be surprised. But don't be surprised.
I like that the whole exercise, sometimes when you put it on a piece of paper, then it's like what you're saying, it's not daydreaming, but it's almost like you've put the reality in front of your face that you can't deny it. This is what it is.
Exactly.
And then you, this is also an opportunity to do the self-reflection over again.
Exactly. Yes.
And I think then it would stop people complaining about I'm overwhelmed. And I think the other part that I think I heard you mention before about planning.
Yeah.
When, like, you know that you have 168 hours, And if you know, if you plan it better, give you more flexibility about what you can do.
Well, you're one of the few who really understands this well, Christine, because students will say to me, well, I don't know if I want to be that planful because then I have no spontaneity. I can't. And of course, as you know, the more planful you are, the more spontaneity you can have because you can get more degrees of freedom, right? And with students, I always use the example, when you've got a term paper to do and you have 2 weeks to do it and you decide you're going to start at the last night, okay, you have no degrees of freedom. You're going to be up all night as opposed to you do a little bit. And then if an opportunity comes up, you can move some things around, right? But if you're not planful, you lose all degrees of freedom and everything is chaos. Everything is chaos. And I really believe what happens is a lot of people don't know where they are spending their time. It's amazing, right? I'll have a situation where a senior executive will come to me and say, I need to talk to you. I've got some issues. And so what's that? Well, I have a bad situation with my family. My family doesn't know me. I don't have the time. I'd really like to talk to you. I said, well, I don't have any answers. No, but you got a lot of opinions and could I talk to you? And I said, well, sure. Well, tomorrow's Saturday. Why don't you come over to the house and we can chat? Well, I can't do it tomorrow. I'm golfing tomorrow. I said, okay, well, on Sunday after church, you want to come by? Well, I'm golfing on Sunday. Well, being the math major, I say to myself, I think it takes 5 hours to golf. So that's 10 hours. Now, if that 10 hours was more important for you to golf than to spend time with your family, I'm not going to judge that. But you seem, Christine, surprised. I'm surprised you're surprised. Okay. The number of people that do things without knowing, and these are pretty bright people, right? It's remarkable. It's absolutely, and I encourage people to ask themselves, okay, what am I doing that I could do less of?
Right.
Or what could I do in a more efficient way? Do I really know where I'm spending the time? And I'm more than happy to, I always tell the students, I give them examples of what I try to do.
Right. I always found sometime the busier a person is, they manage their time better because then they spend less time on something.
Right.
For something that is wasteful. For example, watching 2 hours of TV.
Right.
Or nothing that they can just read the news for 10 minutes.
Exactly.
Things like that.
Exactly.
And I used to joke with a lot of, you know, now that I see a lot of college students and it's like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. And I said, well, I was on campus the other day. I saw a bunch of people throwing a lot of, you know, frisbee, like, you know, having a party. And I remember when I was in college, I would just hang out until midnight talking about nothing for a few hours. So I'm sure there is that. Again, it's about your time management. How do you prioritize your time?
Right. Right. And are you spending the time on the thing? Do you know where you're spending your time? And is that consistent with what you said was important? It's, you know.
But again, it's going back to the discipline.
Absolutely.
It's hard to have that self-discipline.
Yeah.
And how do you instill that? Is this something that your parents can help you instill that self-discipline? Or is this something that you can develop?
Well, funny you ask it that way, because I tell the students, any question that I ask in class, if you answer yes, you get partial credit, okay? So if you have parents or grandparents, that can help. But can this be learned? I think so. It's like people say to me, can leadership be learned? I hope so. That's what I teach. I hope so. I'm actually hoping so. But I think getting people to help you, getting people to challenge you, getting people to say, well, you know, you've got a lot of these really important things. You know, do you really need to watch television? Okay. Or what if you got discipline to say, hey, if I get the following 6 priorities done, well, then I will watch an hour of television. As opposed to, I'll watch an hour of television and then complain about the fact I can't get anything done. Okay. So it comes down to your priorities. And I think I constantly do that self-examination every day because that helps me stay accountable, right? And so people say, again, well, do you do it every day? Well, the example I use is that if I'm at a party with a lot of people till midnight, okay, most people will brush their teeth before they go to bed because that's a habit. So this self-reflection thing, it's a habit, okay? Mm-hmm. And how can I say I don't have 15 minutes, right? And the reason I love to do it before I go to bed is that I don't have any other distraction. Some people do this in the morning. Well, that'd be tough for me because I'm racing off. I got to get someplace. I got to commute. But that quiet period before I go to bed, I find to be the best time to do it.
I think that's what you're doing is like you have the discipline and you create a habit then it becomes part of your workflow. Then it becomes more automatic, and then you benefit from it. And then the more you do, your body remember that. And then like when you don't do it, you feel funny for not doing it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like a muscle. You're developing a muscle.
Yeah.
With the help of some other people that will constantly say, it's like somebody says, well, I want to start to exercise. All right. Well, a lot of people say they're going to exercise. What is it? Somebody said to me, 80% of the people who on January 1st are signing up with a health club, 80% of them by the end of February are gone. They're out of it. Okay. So, but if you tell people I'm going to do this and they say, wait a minute, Harry, I thought you were going to do this. Why are you not doing this? We all need that kind of reinforcement.
Right. I think we need other people to hold us accountable, that force us to be. And then the credibility, you don't want to lose credibility. Exactly. I think that there's that self-motivation. Now, this has really been really fun learning about the different principle. I like the 168 hours because I think, you know, people always think that there's only 24 hours a day. But when you put 168 hours, you realize there's a lot of time.
There's a lot of time. And you have to really, I find it's good to give people specific examples, right? So like students will say to me, well, you have 5 children and you're on these boards and you're teaching, I mean, and you were the CEO. So how do you do all that? I said, well, again, I could tell you what I do, but you're going to do something different. Yeah, I know, but give me an example. So the example I use, and you touched upon it already, I told the students that I when I was in college, in high school, I'd watch television. And then when Julie and I got married, Julie said, you know, Harry, you keep talking about this 168. You know what happens here? We say we're going to watch something for an hour. It's suddenly on for 3 hours, and we didn't get anything out of it all. I think we should stop watching television. Stop. And I was a little defensive. I said, wait a minute, but I need the news. I need to know what's going on. And she said, Harry, you read the summary every day of the New York Times, the Financial Times, you know, The Economist, the Wall Street Journal. Harry, by the time you watch the news, the only thing you've missed is Jojo the rabbit escaped from the zoo. I mean, you missed nothing. And so I've not watched television for 35 years. And students will say to me, well, what about sports? What about sports? And where I'll tease them, I'll say, rather than answering with an answer, answer with a question, which is, Joe, are you going to exercise? Or are you going to watch other people exercise? Just a question. And if you got a favorite team and you want to watch them, do you watch them 2 hours or 4 hours? I mean, I know people, they watch other people exercise all day Saturday, all day Sunday. That's 20 hours. Okay. Now, if that's more important to you than other things, but does that really make sense? Okay. And again, if you have the discipline, am I spending the time on the things I said that are important to me? Rather than being surprised, all right? And the last example is I run into friends, maybe you've seen this, I'll say, how are you doing? Well, I'm just really surprised. What are you surprised? Well, my son, you know, he's gone off to college. Well, didn't you know when he was 10 years old that 8 years later he'd be 18 and he'd be going to, is there a surprise involved here? Why are you surprised? I'm surprised you're surprised.
Right. Now, I'm definitely in that moment. Like my son is in 9th grade. And so I keep telling myself, God, in 3 years, he's going to be gone. I need to think what that life is going to be and what I want to do.
Exactly. And how important is my relationship with him? How important is the things I want to teach him? How important are the times and the memories I want to develop? And then what will I want to do with my life? And how will that change when he leaves?
Right.
As opposed to being surprised.
Exactly. And I think I lost my husband in a very sudden, he died of heart attack while he was mountain biking. So I'm always a planner, but things do happen sometimes totally unexpected, even though he live a healthy life. And, you know, sometimes you just don't know life.
How long ago did he pass away?
He passed away 7 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
And that's the Rosenman Institute was named after him, actually. I don't know if you know that story. I thought maybe you knew. So, but again, that was, you realize anything is possible and also anything, you know, can be taken away from you. But I think at the same time, you still need to think about what that life can be, because you need to, you know, change. You need to adapt.
Yeah.
And you need
And what you remind me of, Christine, is a lot of people, it's a great point, because a lot of people will say to me, what is one of the really true benefits of the self-reflection? And I tell people, if we're honest, what a lot of people will suffer from, and you know this, are some combination of worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and stress, just to name five. And I tell the executives, what do you know about worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and stress? And people say, well, it gets you down, unproductive, not healthy. But if you start doing these things, it drags you down. Mm-hmm. And somebody said to me, well, Harry, how does self-reflection help? And this may sound crazy, Christine, but I convinced myself many years ago that through self-reflection, it's taught me that no matter what happens, and I mean, Christine, no matter what happens, there's only two things I have to do. The first thing I have to do, with a lot of people's help, is to try to do the right thing. Try to do the right thing. The second one is do the best I can do. Mm-hmm. That's all I can do.
Right.
I'll try to do the right thing. I'll do the best I can do. And the beauty of that, Christine, is it significantly reduces worry, fear, anxiety, pressure, and stress, right? Because I know what I'm going to do. And one student said, well, how seriously do you take that? And this sounds a little morbid, but what you've been through, Christine, you'll relate to this. I literally said, okay, well, today's Monday. I don't know what's going to happen Tuesday. Now, what's the worst case? What's the worst case that could happen to me tomorrow? I think it would be something happens to Julie, my wife, Julie, or something happens to one of my five children. Now, I hope it doesn't happen. I'll pray it doesn't happen. I'll do everything I can to prevent it. But if it happens, Christine, I know what I will do. I'll try to do the right thing. I'll do the best I can do. All right. And that mindset just puts you in a view, as you said, some things are going to happen. Let's figure out ahead of time what we're going to do when things happen.
Right.
We'll try to do the right thing. We'll do the best we could do.
And that lowers your anxiety, lower your fear, lower your worry. And I think, I feel like once you feel like you have some sort of plan, even though you knowing that plan might not even happen, but at least knowing what direction that you want to be, it kind of lower your other anxiety. No, so this has been great. I know we are running out of time. As you said, we could talk about this for hours, but thank you so much for your time. This has been great.
Well, it's great to be with you, Christine, and happy to do it again sometime. And I wish you and your listeners the very best.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Kelly Muscat, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.